Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Veerman. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. I'm Mike. We got Max. We got Shane. We got Max calling in from Zoom because he's going on tour, so he can't be in the room with us. I got Shane beside me, though, and that's nice.
It's good to be here.
How you guys doing?
You know, there is an undercurrent of stress that happens when I go on tour. And I know I seem like, yeah, Mr. Carefree guy, Mr., you know, everything's sunny. Life is grand.
There's a dark side.
There's a dark side. It's not a dark side, but I want the tour to be as good as it can be. And I want to make sure that every person in every town who should know about the show is going to the show. I'm plagued by many instances of like getting DMs from people being like, when are you coming to Philadelphia? And I was like, bro, we were just in Philadelphia yesterday. And we've been talking about Philadelphia for the last 9 months, you know, so that kind of thing stresses me out. But I'm trying to enjoy it more because I think if you were to ask the band guys, is Max look like he's having a good time on tour? They'd probably be like, no, he's just sort of walking around all day stressed out about stuff. So I guess I'm coming to you guys. Guys, any tips for me while I'm on tour that I can think about? Because I do think about my friends and words of wisdom and or little routines that that could be good for me and my you know, my well-being. Yeah, so I'm wondering, do you guys have any words of wisdom? You know, just so I can really smell the roses a little bit more. What do you got anything for me?
How are you at making lists? Because I find that making a list and taking what's in my mind out of my mind can help me a little bit.
Oh yeah, I do make a to-do list, but then I find myself making the list so long. It's like a never-ending list, and so I never feel like I'm caught up. I can never like relax, you know? So maybe so I'm into the to-do list cuz I like trying to be as organized as I can. But
the list can never be more than 5 items. That's a list rule.
Like the list gives you anxiety.
Interesting.
Yeah, because you can't get to more than 5 things. Your brain can't really handle more than that on a list. So then, you know, maybe you have like a doom sheet where everything that's on your mind that's taking up bandwidth, you put that on the sheet knowing that everything that's kind of in my mind is on this sheet. And then you take the 5 most important things. And once you get those done, I think you'll feel better and lighter.
Okay, I'll do that. Anything else?
You know, there's always just the thought that we'll all be dead one day and nothing matters.
That was actually pretty good. I kind of like that one.
It is. Honestly, yeah. Like we're all just kind of passing through and nothing really matters. It doesn't. You know what I mean? It's like we're a speck of moment in time. We're a piece of sand on the beach. You know, and obviously you have to deal with yourself every day and you have to get through, you know, you have to find your own zone of happiness. But I find that most things we get pent up about, do not matter. Like, there's big things that matter, you know, like your relationships and how you feel about yourself and all of those things. And, you know, are you able to, you know, sustain your life? But the other stuff's just kind of details that won't matter in a month.
Sometimes I think about Satan, like
poking our asses with a poker for the rest of eternity. Because sometimes people say life doesn't matter, it's all frivolous. So then they kind of live that way. But if there is a God who's keeping score of the things you do, maybe things do matter and you could end up going to hell.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you need to act with intention and you got to try to be decent. But I do think that sometimes I think about, like, you know, the population of India or China, and there's like 2 billion people there and they don't care at all what I'm doing. Then they're all living their own life, right?
Well, just an untapped market. But
yeah,
you'll get there.
How are sales in India? You don't know that.
Now I'm stressed out. I'm like, fuck, China. That's a huge market. Our girl's gotta go.
Yeah.
Because you did a song in French. What if you did a song in Chinese?
Can you imagine me trying to do the song in French was such a tall order. Like, I think, did I tell you about how I tried to memorize the lyrics? Shane, do you know about my process? Did I ever tell you guys this?
No. Did you record yourself and just listen to it over and over
again? Well, no. So it's like I got the French spelling. This is going to shock some of our listeners. So it's like, like that's what it says in French. That's what you sing in French. But I don't know what any of these words mean. And trying to phonetically say them by reading the French, it never worked for my brain. So the way I remember that particular line, okay, let's start there. Day mirror. That's what I think in my mind, like a day mirror. And then, and then I think of the word Shay Gilgis Alexandra. Okay, Shay Kia. Kia nurse. Yeah. And I'm just kind of going through each word and what's like the most like recognizable.
Did you go back to the day mirror at the end of that line there?
Day mirror, no rev. I always think of the good rev was who's the nickname for my friend, Aaron Goldstein, the good rev. No, but no rev. Day mirror, no rev, no long, I don't know what the English equivalents were for that. But anyway, that's actually still a terrible French accent, but that is how bad I am at languages, that I had to literally give like English equivalent inside jokes or inside references for my own brain to get through memorizing that lyric.
Do you know what Avril Lavigne did to get it big across the globe?
What did she do?
Okay, she found her biggest hit. So what's your biggest hit?
Complicated. Skater Boy?
No, your biggest hit.
Oh, my biggest hit.
What's your biggest
hit? Leather Jacket, say.
Leather Jacket. You record Leather Jacket in every language imaginable.
Imaginable.
And release it. That's what Avril did. I think the song was called Girlfriends. Like, hey
you gotta want your girlfriend. Yeah.
That song. So she recorded it in like 48 languages.
Okay.
And it ended up getting over 1 billion views on YouTube and everything. Like it was a good strategy for her.
Interesting.
Now she's just, you know, spending the rest of her life spending. I don't hear from Avril that much.
See, this is the problem. I'm going to think about that. I'm like, shit, we got to be doing multi-languages for all of our songs. I'm stressed out even more, you know? Like I just...
Not helping.
Do you get snippy with the guys when you're stressed out, or like how does that manifest itself?
No, I just kind of become antisocial, I think, because I'm just like trying to focus on the to-do list. You know, it's like that to-do list. And then but the other thing is I give myself more work. So like yesterday or 2 days ago, we were like so busy prepping a million different things for the tour. And it was like wall-to-wall day. And then I got a text from our friend Matt, who's a singer of the band Mount Joy, and they were doing 2 nights at Massey Hall. They're like an American folk rock band. And he was like, yo, man, do you want to come up on stage and like, you know, do a song with us? I was like, yeah, of course. It's like, okay, Silver Lining, second verse. And like, that's one of their big hits. And I was like, no problem. And then I realized I don't really know the words, like, you know, perfectly
inside and out. Yeah.
And so then I spent the next like 5 hours just rehearsing. It was so stressful and it was cool. Like, I'm glad I did it. But I also was like, as I was doing it, I was like, man, why am I doing this to myself? But anyway, these are my own problems that I've made for myself. That's the way it goes. Anyway,
what was the hang at the show? Did you, you know, did you hang in the green room? Did you hang out for the whole show, or did you just get in, sing your song, and get out?
You know, they were doing two sets in the night. So between sets one and two, I pop back there. They have a bunch of gear set up. They have like a jam room in that they bring into every venue. And we went through the tunes, and I could tell they're kind of tired because they've been touring a lot this year. But you know, they wanted to make the show special. I came out during the encore and did The Wait by the band because it's a, I think they wanted to play something Canadian. But yeah, no, nice, super nice. But I actually, you know, it's funny. I was sort of taken by how chill Matt was, how kind of chill they all seemed to be. And I was like, man, maybe I need to do some more of that, like, just stoner folk hippie vibe thing. Cause he was just like, cool, man, whatever. Just come up for verse two. It'll be great. I was like, man, I need that.
He knows it's just a night in a sea of many, and there'll be another show tomorrow night and a show after that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if it didn't go well, it doesn't go well. You keep it moving.
Yeah.
But for you, this is a one-off. So
that's true.
How much do you think about the pop that you get when you walk on stage? And the pop, for people who don't know this term, it's the round of applause you get when you're first introduced.
Yeah, I knew there was going to be a friendly crowd there because there's definitely, like, at least in Toronto, like an Art Kells, my Mount Joy crossover in the audience. And like when I was watching the first set, there's a lot of people come up to me and saying, hey, so I figured it would go well. I was excited about it, and I was satisfied. It was good. Anyway, boys, what's going on? What's the latest and greatest? What are we talking about?
Whew. Well, Max, big things may or may not be happening within the Dessert Crew. We might be working on a new project, and it might not be what you're probably guessing it is right now.
Yeah, I like this. I know what you're talking about. Our listeners clearly don't. But Shane, is this leading to stress for you? Or now that you've got a full season of the Dessert in the bag and you know what to do, that it becomes easier?
I think everything's easier after you do the Dessert. So this project, although, you know, things are always under time constraints, and things are always difficult when it comes to shooting anything, whether it's a 30-second commercial or a, you know, series or a sketch show. This would be easier than shooting a sketch show. And I don't think anything's harder than doing a sketch show.
You don't think anything's hard?
I think it's the hardest thing in the world because you're always changing location. You're never getting comfortable in the character. You have to do something different. And, you know, every day you're shooting two sketches. Your hair is never the same. Your makeup's never the same. Your wardrobe, your location. It's just go, go, go. And you don't even have time to think if you're doing a good performance.
You know, it's funny. I was watching the show this morning, Hacks. Do you know that show? It's on HBO.
Yes, I've seen the first season. Yeah.
Okay, I'm enjoying it. Who's the older star? The
Jean Smart? Is it Jean? Jean Smart?
Yeah, she's famous from Designing Women,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's a funny pull.
And she has a part in Garden
State.
She
has this diatribe directed at her, the young comedy writer that she's like working with, because she plays like an aging stand-up comedian in Las Vegas. And she just screams at her. She's like, good is the baseline. You have to, like, that is the minimum, is to be good. It doesn't matter if you're good. You have to scrap and claw, and it doesn't get easier. And then you have to, and I was like, wow, this is, I think there's truth to that, but in that it doesn't totally necessarily get easier. But it's also, that's like the most demoralizing career path piece of advice that you're like, even if you get something, it becomes that much harder. I was like, man. It's heavy, you know?
Sounds like she needs to make a list.
Exactly. But only five items.
But only five.
Only five items.
Yeah, audiences do not care how much work goes into anything. It's like, is this great or is it not? They don't care that you know, it was almost impossible to get that location or that special effect. They said it couldn't be done, but you pulled it off. It's like, we've seen Jurassic Park and Terminator. Is it as good as that? And that's kind of the barometer that every audience goes by.
Yeah. And nobody is going to be around for the excuses. Like if it's like, oh, that didn't work because of X, Y, and Z. Like, you can't have that conversation. It just gets judged on the way it is.
There's a great documentary called American Movie about this. He's a really nerdy filmmaker, and he's trying to make this awesome horror film. And he just gets into how, if we don't shoot this, we can't show a black screen with text saying, sorry, we tried our hardest, but in spite of that, we could not film this one scene. And he just articulates it in a way that you're like, yeah, you can't do that. No one cares about your good intentions. It's all about the end result.
Yeah.
But I always think of that. And, you know, and sure enough, anytime I try my hardest to do anything, there's always just people with arms crossed waiting to shit on it. And, and that's good. And that's fine, too. And I shit on things, too.
It's like the thing you like people. I don't know who said this, but it's like it's hard to make even a bad movie. Like like somebody put their heart and soul in it. Like think of the shittiest movie you saw. That was somebody's dream. That was somebody's like passion project or like, you know what I mean? Like somebody cared about that, whether it was the writer or the director or the actors getting their shot. But it's like even bad movies take an incredible amount of effort and work.
Yeah. The big quote is that a bad movie and a good movie take just as much work.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. that's a great line. Yeah. I mean, a bad movie is so interesting because like every single thing kind of has to be good. Like you say, okay, you got a great script. Okay, cool. But like if it's not executed well, then the script means nothing. You know, it's like, oh, you got great actors. But if the script's kind of shit, then that's not going to do the trick either. Right. Like it just, everything must work.
Yeah, I think the formula for a great movie is it needs three standout memorable scenes and an amazing ending. That's kind of the formula people have devised to how you can do a good movie. And if you don't have those things, it's not going to be considered good.
Interesting. Guys, how was your weekend away with the big gang?
Oh yes, we went glamping with our families, Shane.
Yes, we did.
You know, I gotta say, before you explain yeah. The thing I always think about. Because I know all the
parents.
How
you just wish you were there.
No, definitely not. But I was always thinking about, because I know the parents all get along, but I wonder how the kids are getting along. Because you're posting all these cute kids of Pop's kids and your kids, and like, you know, they're all hugging each other. But I'm like, I wonder what's going on there. I wonder how much the kids like each other. And I started thinking about my own childhood going like, oh yeah, I had friends because of my parents, but I also had a lot of friends just through school. But are all the kids getting along okay? Are there any bullies in the group?
I think Lou has my daughter Lucy has the biggest problem with doing things that aren't constant fun. So for example, there was a moment where Winona and Josephine, or they wanted to watch the show Bluey, but Lucy can only tolerate that for maybe a minute. And then she wants to do something else and just, oh, nothing can be fun enough for her. So that did cause tense moments within the group. Because Josephine and Winona, they're pretty patient and they're into the arts and they can actually sit and be calm. But Lucy just has no patience. And that's her problem in school, too. We talked to the teacher. They say she has a lot of problems with focus.
Yeah. Overall, though, I would say this year more than any other year, the kids, like I felt like as a group, all the kids were really kind of getting along as a unit. Like, because usually they break off into little cohorts and stuff like of who sees each other the most. But they do legit get along. Like you said, if you think back to like all your friends when you're little, actually, we're talking about this for birthday parties actually right now, is it's like Danica was like, we're planning Winona's birthday party. And it's like, I'm looking at the guest list and it's like Winona's school buddies. And then like, a couple of her like buds that are like actually friends, like, you know, like Lucy or whatever and Joe. But then I'm like, oh, but there's all these like kids that are like left. And I was just like, and then Danica's like, well, yeah, it's like, it's all her friends aren't your friends' kids. And I was like, but I just remember when I was a kid, like all my birthday parties were basically like my parents' friends' kids. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, but that changed. I was like, that changed when I was like 11. I just did whatever the fuck I was told to do. But now turning 5, she has so much more autonomy and agency over her own party. It's actually kind of like,
I hate that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of like, because I feel bad because I'm like, oh, there's people that aren't going to be invited to this party that are going to like see the photos or whatever. And it's like, oh, I didn't get to go to that's like, yeah, she Wynn had a guest list of 11. And I guess we're letting her call the shots at this point.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The main logic is because you don't want the parents to feel awkward because now all of a sudden school friends are coming and then there's parents and then they have to intermingle more often than not because you can't really drop your kid off. I think that's a little taboo to just drop off and leave.
Oh,
so you do that?
No. Oh. I like this as it because me and Danica have talked about this because so some parents do that. It's like
I've never seen it in action.
Yeah, it's happened in the wild. There was a party I know for one of the kids in her class and some of the parents, it was a drop-off party. You just drop your kids off.
That's cool.
See, I wonder what age you can comfortably do a drop-off. Like 6, 7? I don't know. I'm kind of learning as I go. But I do think it is awkward dealing with other parents who you don't really know. It's totally. Less about the kids to me and more about the parents you can hang with.
Yeah. But to your question about glamping, it was a good time. This is a tradition that we've been doing now since Danica threw me a big surprise birthday party like 2 years ago. And so we've done it every year. And you have to book it the minute you – like, so like we do the weekend. We just finished our – glamping weekend, and then everyone got home, and then we had so much fun, we booked it again. Because this place has got, you know, there's only so many yurts. Is that what they're called? These glamping tents?
I believe so, yes. Yeah. And there is one opening available.
Max, I know you're dying to come.
And there are people without kids who come.
Yeah. Of all the kids, who resembles their parent or parents the most? I'm always curious because now they're really turning into little people. And Shane, you talk about like, you know, you have it. Lucy's got no attention span. And did Shane have no attention span as a kid? Or where does that come from?
I didn't.
Yeah. And because you were talking about how stressed out Lucy gets about not being able to drive when she gets older and shit like that. I don't even know Joe. What is Joe more like, Pops or Sarah?
She looks more like Sarah, and she probably is more like Popolis. Maybe if I just had to
say,
did
she tell everyone she's a Mensa member all the time?
No, but I could see her heading there. Like, she's very intelligent and, you know, she's definitely into art and learning and drawing. Like, and she can really hyper focus on things. I've noticed she's like the reverse Lucy a little bit.
What about you, Mike?
In terms of who looks the most alike, I would say maybe if it's just pure looks, I think Winnie and Mike, especially with Mike's hair currently, they look the most alike.
Mike looks like a little Asian girl.
Yeah, exactly.
It is kind of remarkable, though, how much of the Asian gene crossed over to her.
Yeah. Because
really, she's like 1/8 Asian, but she looks like a 50%er.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's only 1/8. I thought she's a quarter.
What am I? I'm half half Indonesian.
Oh, I thought you were 1/4.
No. So my oma, my opa. Well, yeah, it's complicated, but basically my oma, my opa are both half Indonesian each, and then French and then Dutch. And then so my dad would be
half,
I guess, half Indonesian. And then
so you'd be a quarter.
I'd be a quarter, so then she's whatever that is.
Wow. So then if you do it again, she'd be 1/8, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but she definitely has like more of the Indonesian sort of, yeah.
Like aesthetic. Strong genes.
Yeah, and you know what's, and the other thing, and then my other daughter, Roberta, looks so much like Danica.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't even really know they're like sisters. I can see it, like when I look at Roberta, like I can see some of the veerman, and definitely climby, like my mom's side. I can see it in her, but they don't look alike at all. Like I don't think they look alike.
Yeah.
Even Lucy and Betty, I find, you know, they don't look super alike. Like, you know what I mean?
No,
like,
yeah.
They're very different sort of vibes.
No, for sure.
But it was a good hang. But to Shane's point, tons of, whatchamacallit, kidless people came. You know,
Mike and Molly came.
Peek is there with legs.
AJ and Carly, like they seem to have such a great time. Like, this is their third year in a row too. So,
and I feel like Peek also, not that he's mean by any means, because he's not, but he has no time for the kids.
No,
like he's not like Uncle Matt or anything. He's just like, yeah. And anytime they say anything, it's kind of like, like there's no thing, and there's nothing absolutely wrong with that. I'm just saying you could fit in and hang in seamlessly and not even talk to the kids.
That's good to know. Well, that's very good.
You know what though? Max doesn't seem like a guy that could chill at like a campsite.
You know what? I think that's
phone.
The problem. It has more to do, I think, with the camping element than the kid element, because I don't like going
it's
to anybody's
not camping.
Camp. No, I don't
still
like
think
going
he can vacation. Yeah. Like, I don't think he just sits somewhere for a few hours.
Here's what Max would do. He'd go to the brewery. He'd have one beer. He'd be like, all right, I'm good. I'm going to go for a walk. You just hike. The Wi-Fi is good. And you just send your texts and your DMs and you think a lot. And then you kind of pop in for like 1 or 2 hours at nighttime. And you're like, this is great. And then you go back to your tent alone and you text and you DM. And that's it. Like, there's plenty of walking time and time to be like, hey,
that's how
I just got to be by myself.
Because that's kind of how I am on bachelor trips too, you know?
Oh, like, totally. Like, that's how you sort of vacation. It's like you kind of pop in and out. Although usually you'll give yourself one night where you're like present, like you're there to party and you're like in it till 2 a.m.
But you know what? This is kind of going back to the beginning of the podcast here, where I was like, maybe I need to be better at just being a little bit more present with the people I'm with. You know,
maybe.
I think that's part of my issue. Maybe. I don't know.
You might be happier, but I don't know. Who knows? Right. Like, we can't be who we're not as well.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think you're so, why do you think you're so, do you think it's a drive to succeed? Like, are you afraid to fail, or is it like, what is it driving this sort of like, your anxiety and sort of your need to always be tethered to your phone and working all the time?
I think it's freelancer syndrome.
Yeah. There's a bit of that freelancer syndrome. You want to explain that to our listeners, Shane? What freelancer syndrome is?
Freelancer syndrome is, you know, you can definitely make more money if you're a freelancer, but if you don't work, you don't get paid. So there's this desire to always say yes to every opportunity that comes your way, because your job could be gone tomorrow and then you could be unemployable and be without house and home and everything. So even people who are very successful can sometimes get caught into the trappings of the syndrome where they cannot say no and it becomes very habitual.
Okay, I think there's part of that for sure, because I recognize, I'm self-aware enough to know how precious the job is. And if you don't like stay with it, then, you know, it could fade away. I think the other thing though, is that I really like, I think the thing that gets me off the most, like genuinely, has to do with like the creative, is like creative ideas. So if somebody's like, hey, I got an idea for, I don't know, like literally anything. It's like a restaurant, a new TV show, a podcast. Like Mike, you mentioned a podcast idea that I had, and then we end up talking about it for like 45 minutes. And I was like, this is so fun. You got to make the podcast. Like I get so-
What is it?
Oh, I talked to you about it a long time ago, but I'm not going to talk on here because I think it's a good idea.
Okay.
But basically I had an idea for a podcast that's kind of been banging around my brain. I told you about this like last year, but I just never had time. I had like a new baby and all this stuff. We were out for drinks and then it came up. We were talking about something and we were with a kind of a group of people, but Max was like, do it, just record it. And then the next day he followed up. He's like, have you recorded it yet?
Is it the like a Star Trek thing and you're always in character as Picard?
No.
Okay. Do you think I'd be interested in that?
I'm joking. Because I like it.
Make it so.
I like the idea of Mike doing that.
Star Trek bot? Yeah.
Yeah. It was Star Trek bot. I would not be interested in supporting Mike in that endeavor like at all.
I'm trying to find a way to use this podcast to get me on the Star Trek cruise for free and I can cover it.
I support that. I support a bamboozle or a hijinks. So if we can figure that out, I'm totally about it.
That's the dream.
Yeah, you making your own Star Trek pod, I don't really care about. So I do like, but anyway, and Shane, when we ran each other on Queen Street, we ended up walking around for an hour and it was the greatest hour of the week because we were just like waxing on ideas. And I get so pumped about them.
And that was very helpful, by the way, because that thing we alluded to, a huge element of the thing that we alluded to came from that walk.
Good.
That we're working on right now.
Yes.
Yes, for listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, let's do more. Yeah. So I think I just love... Like, yeah, I love thinking about like new projects. It's not because I'm like, it never has anything to do with like, because it'll make me money. I just like love the idea of working with my friends and like doing something creative. And yeah, so that's where I think the other thing comes from. But that said, I could probably be happier a little bit if I just slowed down, maybe took a little bit more interest in people's personal lives, you know, just other day-to-day things that might ground me a little bit. I don't know.
Do you think if the what seems like a pipe dream, which is being in a big successful band, if that never paid off for you and you just ended up with a, you know, a pretty good job, could you relax? Do you think at that you have a guaranteed job, a 401k, could you just be like living a comfortable life that's stress-free?
It's a good question. I think I've always had that instinct though to like want to find fun. You know what I mean? Like everything, yeah, even when I was a teenager, I was just like, okay, I want to like intern at a booking agency, or like in undergrad, I'm like, okay, I want to start a band. I just want to start a band. Okay, I'm going to go bug the events promoter at McMaster and get him to like give us a gig opening for whatever. And so I've always had that in me. So I think the instinct to try to find a project has always been there. And that is, yeah, I don't know if I'd ever be like that comfortable. And I think because here's another thing. I think because I've had a taste of it, you know, we got to make a TV show together. You know, our band gets to go on tour. We get to make stuff all the time. Now, because I know how fun that is, I just, and then that's probably where the freelancer syndrome comes in, where I'm like, okay, I want to keep doing it because I don't want to not be able to do it.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, well, what was the main topic of conversation around the campfire at the clamping?
Well, I lately, I don't know what it is. Probably just my age and getting old. Unless I'm prepared to have a hangover the next morning, I have to go to bed at like 11.
Mm. Okay, here's a question.
If I'm prepared, yeah. What's up?
Another thing I find, which I don't actually know if I enjoy it that much, or I can only do it so much, mm-hmm. is that like when I'm having conversations with my friends, I want to get into like the harder, more complicated, big questions of life stuff.
That's like, my problem.
Like immediately. And when people are just kind of like yucking it up and just kind of making jokes, like that's entertaining me for like a little bit, but I don't know if I like it that much. I'd rather like go into small groups and talk about kind of like the nitty gritty of people's like problems. And it's hard to do that in bigger groups. I just find that's hard.
That's so funny you say that, because that's I can't stop thinking about that when I am in a larger group. Just like, oh, I wish I could pair this off to just like three people that I want to talk to right now. Ask them maybe harder, more difficult questions that wouldn't be inappropriate mm-hmm. in a broader group. Maybe. Like Mike had a good question. He came over to I was sitting beside Poplis, and he just asked like, how often do you guys fight with your significant other? And it's a really interesting question, but it's not something you can talk about with your significant other listening or other people uh-huh. because that might not be appropriate to have in the campfire. Where when I was younger, I really liked just the idea of maybe entertaining a group or trying to be outrageous or funny or that drunken kind of thing. And Mike, I find, and I was told this by McPeak the next morning, Mike apparently went on this like 90-minute like stand-up routine that was very, you know, the part of me is like, oh, I wish I could still have the energy to do that. But another part of me is like, just be you, who you are now and what you feel. And I'm more the type to kind of sit back and enjoy a routine like that. But there was.
I only want to be in big groups with Mike Veerman, by the way. Mike is such an amazing storyteller.
Me too. Like he can do both things so incredible. Very well.
Yeah.
But there is this like when I was younger, I'll say like maybe 25 was the peak of me. I would have this character who is very confrontational, like too much. It's like too rude.
I remember this.
But I'd always be like, shut up. And then I'd be like, calm down. But I couldn't find a way to make that character work, like where it could be with men and women and couples and fun. I retired that character once I realized that I couldn't find the right balance to be entertaining with like a commercial group. But Mike took the good parts of that bit and combined it with a bunch of other things. And he just has this awesome character he becomes at a certain point if all the stars align, and it's just very hilarious where he can go around the room and there can be an infinite number of topics brought up and he can think of the perfect thing to say, like I'll let Mike tell it, but one of the bits that just I can imagine being there is one of the wives who's very filled with dignity and kind of shyer, Rebecca, she walked by a fire, I guess, bent down. And Mike made a joke about her farting and igniting the fire and burning someone to a crisp. And he was just like riffing on that for a long period. And apparently that was kind of the impetus to like a 90-minute stand-up bit.
Yeah, it started because I did the joke about the fart and I got a laugh. But then I joked about her and like incinerating psycho who was on the other side of the fire and he got murdered. And then she was like, Mike, don't make that joke. And then she kind of faked like she was going to turn around and then fart on the fire and kill me. And I was like, don't do it, Rebecca. I've got everything to live for. Psycho's got nothing. And you know, I was just like, he can, anyway, it was, I was just riffing. And then I was like, oh, he's got a mortgage, but with these interest rates, maybe you'd be doing a favor by killing him. I literally was just like riffing. And riffing, but it was the perfect amount. Everyone was drunk and it was like all around the fire and it was just in that pocket. But it's funny when you guys are saying that, because like I obviously like I love those intimate conversations. I want to have those, you know, like for out for beers in a small group and you want to kind of solve the world's problems or sort of get stuff off your chest or figure out your life. But then I also love just the madness of like that fucking shoot around the room and everybody's.
Yeah.
But that's the thing too. You guys are also like, you guys are, you know, you're talking about preference, but like you're both still very funny and engaging in those moments. Like when it gets into a big group.
For sure. But what I find is I don't like to be leading the point.
Yes.
And you know, you come to a point in your life where you kind of realize what you like and what you are, and you can be forcing it. Cause sometimes if you're doing that, I might try to force myself in and be that person. But if I'm not feeling it, it can feel forced. It's like, I don't know, Rodman looking at Jordan being like, I'm going to throw up some, you know,
the ball.
Yeah, 3 points right now. It's like, no, stick to rebounding and hustle plays and steals. Or, you know, if you're Steve Kerr type, just, which I consider myself conversationally to be more of a picking my moments, coming in with a little comment and then exiting. And I'm just comfortable being that now. But when I was young, forces are working with you to kind of be that bigger, funnier person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As when now I'm like, oh, I'm much more apt to sit there and take everything in. And sometimes I like just sitting there not talking and just,
yeah,
especially like I had half a weed drink and a shot of absinthe.
Oh yeah.
So I was very chill.
Yeah.
And enjoying it. And it was a great time. But yeah, Max is obviously, you're more of a alpha dog, kind of like going around the room trying to incite conversation.
But I still feel like sometimes if I'm playing point that I really have to kind of you know, assert a lot of energy. Whereas why yes. Mike is so amazing is that you do it so effortlessly. And that's why my favorite group setting is if I'm right next to Mike. And that's the best spot to be in. It's just be right next to Mike Veerman in a bigger group while he's doing it all.
Yes. It definitely takes the mental load off of everything. And then you get to pick and choose how much you want to engage in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. You guys are too kind. This has been a nice pod. Glamping was fun, but it is, you know, it's kids stuff during the day. Actually, I found this year, I don't know, because kids are getting older, I thought the day stuff with the kids was so fun. Like it was really good. Like sometimes you're waiting to get to like, oh, let's have some drinks with the adults. But it was like, it was kind of the perfect balance of like everything, like the kids playing, doing little hikes, having a laugh. Danica was playing bocce ball and getting super competitive. And I love,
she was good.
I love seeing that side of her because she doesn't often so then when she gets into it after a few drinks and she really wanted to like destroy a bocce ball, like I love seeing Dan go for that and succeeding. So it was a good time. It was a good hang. Anything else going on? I mean, you're going on tour. How much do you pack for tour, Max? Are you like one, like rolly?
One rolly. I've sent some of my show gear ahead with the equipment. So that's being shipped down there.
When you say show gear, is that just like your tickle trunk full of weird clothing?
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Tickle trunk.
Well, it's interesting you say that because there is a bit of a tickle trunk going on the tour. I don't want to give too much away about the tour, but I was thinking about I find just like a straight up rock show to be like a little boring. And I'm thinking like, yeah, and you kind of want to make each tour unique in its own way. So at least right now, I was saying, okay, our album's called Laundry Pile, but the tour is the At Your Service tour because we wanted to make it clear that it wasn't just going to be like 10 sad songs. It wasn't going to be like an acoustic tour. So we're here to please. We're at your service. But we want to reference Laundry Pile. So we have a laundry line that we're going to bring with us that's going to have different t-shirts and things hanging up on it. It's going to say Arkells in different garments. So there's like a hoodie, there's shorts, there's t-shirts. And then throughout the show, I'm going to turn certain shirts around and it's going to have like a message for the audience, like dance or welcome or hear the rules. And maybe I'm giving away too much right now, but I am.
Sounds fun. Dance. Here's the rules. No. Can we just do what we want, Max?
And also though, we did these pop-up shows in Hamilton in Toronto, in laundromats. Do you guys see that? Do you guys think that was clever?
Yes, that seemed exhausting. Very fun for the people just getting that one song, but you guys must have been dead at the end of those
days. Yeah, we were very dead by the end of it, but it was cool.
Actually, I saw that Jillian Smart and Isabella Campbell from The Dessert on Crave showed up at the one in Toronto.
Yeah, they came by to support. It was awesome. Yeah, it was great to see them. And but what we did was we had a laundry bin and each t-shirt had a different song title on it. And we had a volunteer in each small group pick the shirt and that was the song they got. So we're going to bring that bit on to the tour as well. So there's more props. We have a phone request bit. I also, when we were in Ottawa, somebody had a bubble gun, which like shoots bubbles into the air. And I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. So we bought one of those. Yeah, so I want.
So you're definitely not Oasis. Like, there's stuff going on.
Definitely not Oasis. I'm more. I always think David Byrne is just the greatest. You know, from
that's a good comp.
The Talking Heads,
like Flaming Lips.
I was just gonna say the guy from Flaming Lips is good too.
Kind of mixed them up.
Wasn't that guy dating Miley Cyrus for a bit, even though there was a massive age gap? Maybe I'm wrong about that, but
yeah, they're hanging out for sure. But I do like more theatery stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. Sometimes I see those bands like Oasis that, you know, millions of people love and they just stand there. I'm like, and I just think to myself, what a fucking easy gig. They're like, they just have to walk on stage. They don't even have to smile. And their fans don't want them to smile. It's like, but they don't even have to use that muscle of having to smile. And I'm like, well, that must be easy. But then, you know, I went to go see Phoenix. You guys like Phoenix, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yep.
And they had so many props and so many bits in their show. I was like, even a cool band like Phoenix is like trying hard. So that's what we're going to do on this tour. We have a tickle trunk of surprises.
That's exciting.
So all of your clothing, you don't bring that in your little luggage, right? Your clothing isn't real clothes. It's just like that show
clothes.
Props. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a jacket and some pants and stuff like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Who packs the most out of the band?
Good question. I feel like we're all pretty light packers. Nick probably packs the least. I think everyone's pretty reasonable. I don't know.
The most high maintenance traveler out of the five of you?
Has to be you, Mac.
Great question. I think everybody has their own quirks. Who would be the most high maintenance? I think everyone's pretty... I don't know if anybody's particularly high maintenance. Everyone's pretty easygoing. I'm trying to think if anybody has any...
Diplomatic answer. Yeah,
I picture all the other guys just saying Max in unison if they were asked that question.
Yeah. And what's the old saying? It's like if you look around the room and you can't tell who the drunkest guy in the room is, it's you.
Yeah. I don't know. Everyone's pretty reasonable tonight. I don't know. That drunk.
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like I'm pretty chill in some ways, but also probably kind of OCD and neurotic in other ways. I don't know. I'm not sure. But let's wrap it up. I think it's a good time.
Oh, we weren't gonna touch on Taylor Swift?
Oh, fuck. Let's talk about Taylor Swift. Absolutely. Let's definitely talk about Taylor Swift and then we'll wrap it up. Let's do it.
All right.
Why is this blowing up the world compared to any of her other boyfriends? Is it because Taylor right now is at the height of her powers or is there some special dynamic with this football player and her?
I think the way I understand it, it's a confluence of one, Taylor Swift's probably the most famous person in the world at the moment. So that helps. Two, her fan base is obviously like fervent or whatever the word is. But combining that with the NFL, which is easily the most sort of popular sport in North America, it's like, and their fans are crazy. It's almost like two massive entities, which is like NFL and NFL consumption and Twitter, and then like Taylor Swift and that whole machine and industry. It's like two industries coming together to like basically explode content in a way that is like obviously extremely, extremely visible and present. I think that's got to be it. Maybe she hasn't really dated athletes. Like she's kind of dated like musicians and actors.
She dated a lot of Brits lately. And like Travis Kelce is a very charming NFL player. Like he went to, do you know, I didn't know this, but he went to her concert and wore a friendship bracelet and was trying to get it to her. So that's sort of the story leading up to them actually getting together. So like, here's a guy who's one of the best players in the league, one of the most recognizable players in the league, who is
He's hosted SNL, right?
He's hosted. Yeah. And he's full of whimsy, you know, he's charming. And so I think
hard to look at either.
Not too hard to look at.
That's important.
Yeah, but NFL is the biggest thing in America. She hasn't dated an American in a while. She's the biggest thing in the world. He's got cool style, right? Like, I think he does. He was wearing that cool, like, Canadian tuxedo.
He kind of dresses like you on stage. Like he was wearing like a weird, like cloud-like jacket with pants, which I think you own that exact same jacket.
Yeah, that's what I said.
He's got great style. Really cool. I don't know what it is about him. But he only had 2 million followers when they started dating. Obviously, he's gained like half a mil, so he's up to 3 million followers now. But she has hundreds of millions of followers. So it seems inequitable in terms of popularity. And I think she's dated more famous people, but it might just be like the sports element.
Like, oh, yeah. She's good for him if his goal is to be a more known or famous person. Did you guys see this? I saw some tweet yesterday. I don't know when, but it had all the metrics like that. That quickly became the most viewed NFL game. Like the ratings, like once I guess word went around Twitter that she was at the game, everybody tuned in. His metrics on like, I guess, social media.
Jersey sales are through the roof for
400%.
This guy.
His merch sales are up. So anyway, the Taylor effect. But yeah, to the point, it's interesting. Like, do you think from Taylor's perspective, like, because she's been very visible, she could easily gone to the game and not made a scene of it. But she was in the box. She's on the screen. She's with the mom. And then they do the walkout after. Like there's a lot going on here that is very forward facing. Do you think that means it's like, oh, they've been dating for a while and now it's just public? Or is this like this is publicity?
I don't think they've been dating for a while. I think it's sort of publicity. It strikes. And someone also said that he's born in 1989 and her record re-release, 1989, is coming out next month in October.
Mm. Oh, Shane, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Did you see the clip of her cleaning up the cups?
No.
So you know, she was in like a box.
Yeah.
Whatever. Somebody from below the box was filming, like, I guess after the game or when she was about to leave, and she's picking up, like, she's cleaning all the cups, all the discarded cups. So it's like someone at the end of a Thanksgiving, you know, you help do the dishes. She's doing this in the box. Like, one of the biggest stars in the world is helping. And everyone obviously saw this as like what a fucking great person that she would even do something. I know it's such a basic thing to do, but somebody of her stature isn't going to be cleaning up people's random discarded cups.
Oh, do you think interesting. She knew
like, what's your take on it?
I think if you're Taylor, because me, just as a complete unknown, I always think I'm being watched to some extent.
Yeah.
If I'm out in public, so I'll do things that I might not do in the comfort of my own home. I might, you know, just be lazy. But if I think I'm doing something that might be perceived as rude, just knowing that I could always be watched at some point and someone could cast a judgment of this single thing, I'll try to be extra polite and do things or be extra neat. So I think she, being Taylor Swift, knows. And she's probably been filmed in the beach, like weird yachts where she thought she was being private and then saw herself in the paper. So knowing all of that, I think everything she does is performative in some sense, even on a subconscious level that she might not even realize.
Yeah. So do you think she's the sort of person that if she was just at a cottage and there was no cameras around, she would clean the cups though?
I think she would. If she was at Travis Kelce's cottage, I think she'd want to impress the mom.
Yeah.
To be like, look at this. And I think they have similar moms from what I've seen of the mom in the box there.
Yeah.
So I do think this could be the guy that is actually the right match for Taylor, where they end up getting married and have a long relationship.
Maybe this is Taylor's thing. She's been sort of like dabbling with like Brits, you know, in this European thing. But maybe she just needed another like American who's got the like
American
these
boy.
Sort of... these sort of like Midwest American values or whatever you want to call it. Southern values. I don't know. Where is she from? Tennessee? I can't remember.
He has a country vibe to him. I'm not sure where.
I think she's from Pennsylvania. Wait. But then we moved to Nashville.
No, but she sings country music. So, you know, everyone who does country, they kind of pretend they have an accent.
Yeah.
Right. And I think he actually has an accent. Like a southern accent. Thing.
That's
I'm not sure exactly where he's from. But this feels like a really good fit. And I wonder if the world can see that chemistry and they're anticipating that, oh, we're in for like royalty here in some ways.
Her fans, I don't know if you guys saw this tweet, but I guess one of like the Swifties had basically was like a Travis Kelce red flag. And they basically, have you guys seen this tweet?
No.
And basically they screen grabbed, I guess there's footage of him from like a practice and him and a teammate got in a kerfuffle. And I guess Travis hit the teammate. And so the Swiftie was like, this is a Travis red flag. When he gets angry, he clearly hits people. And before you start like, and fuck you if you don't think I should be worried for Taylor right now or something like that. And somebody screen grabbed that and was like, let's go. Like meaning like we're into the bizarre world now where it's like the Swifties and the NFL fans. And it's got like 20,000 likes, but it's just like sort of an example of her fans. You know what I mean? Like sort of imposing this narrative and whatever, looking out for their favorite person.
Do you think that now more than ever, that in like the scope of history that the masses are asses? Is this like peak masses are asses right now?
This is my first time hearing this term. I think I can deduce what
the
it
masses
means
from are just, asses. Yeah,
that, like it's like how people as individual don't really care, but then they pretend to care when everyone gets together, right?
Yeah, well, no, just that the, yeah, what's the definition of the masses are asses? You know what I'm talking about, right?
When you get popular, like a lot of people are going to come after you and treat you unfairly.
Well, yeah, but just with the internet. Yeah, it's from 1997. Huh.
That's where that term came out?
Yeah.
It's like how people go looting, right? No individual person would throw a brick through a window and start stealing shit, but you see everyone doing it, and that's kind of what the internet does, right?
I read that somewhere. That's actually that's like a theory, like about like a behavioral thing, where it's like there's a scale, there's a certain spectrum that people are on. Like there's a sort of person that would throw a brick through a window, there's a sort of person that would stop a guy throwing a brick through a window, and then there's this whole scale of people that like if one person throws the brick, and then another person throws the brick, they can be swayed. It's basically just like mob mentality, right? Like
that's mob what mentality. It is.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. But anyway, it is like it's a true thing. But anyway, the masses are asses. Is that gonna be the name of this pod?
Yeah, I think it is. And because I just think about all this, the commentary around Taylor Swift and this guy, people are just like saying stuff, making up stuff. There's that thing that went viral of somebody said this was recovered from the Kansas City Chiefs stadium, and it looks like someone's handwriting about going through like who the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs is, like what their mascot is, who the popular players are. It was a cheat sheet. And I was like, this is Taylor's handwritten cheat sheet that she brought with her to the box. And people, and that's going, that thing's going viral, and it seems like a fake, obviously. But
it's just
like,
plausible enough that people love it. It's like, yeah.
Just like, guys,
do you think she would bring a cheat sheet?
I don't think she would. But how long are we given this relationship? I've given my prediction that full marriage till death do they part.
That's what you think?
That's my prediction.
I think like 2 months.
2 months.
Ooh. Yeah, 2 months.
I don't think it goes that long. I think it's done. I'll take the under on 2 months. Shane's taking the over on 2 months. Max is holding the line at 2 months. That's a prediction.
Okay, last question. Because we're talking about marketing, we're talking about branding. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about the hustle. Okay. Let's say Taylor Swift discovers you, Shane, right? And she DMs you. She says, I want to go on a date with you. She knows you're a married man. Do you talk to Alex about this and say, like, Alex, this is not going to last very long, but this will be really good for this family tree, the content around it. There'll be so much love. There'll be hate. There'll be conversation, you know, online. We're living that freelance mentality, you know?
This is a great question.
Does Alex say, you know what, go date Taylor for 2 months and then
she
come back?
She wouldn't like it. She wouldn't like it at all. Like,
But it's Taylor Swift.
I know, but I guess what I would do is I would try to have a meeting and say, okay, we all know Taylor wants a sexual relationship here, but what I'm going to do is meet her and play dumb and act like it's just a meeting of the minds coming together. We full know what Taylor wants out of this, but Alex, I promise you, I'm not going to cross that line. I'm just going to play a little bit stupid, like I don't know what Taylor really wants out of this.
Yeah, but then what happens when Taylor wants it?
Well, we'll cross that bridge. No, I would just say no, Taylor. I'm married and I have kids and I don't know what you thought was going to happen here, but I'm here for publicity only. And then boom, get the publicity. And then I have this awesome story to tell for the rest of
my life. She has a song called It's a Crying Shame.
Yeah. Yes. That's good. Yeah. See, ooh, it was Campfire Wit. All right. Calm down.
Calm down. You got to go on a tour, Max. Uh-huh. We got to get back to work. This has been a great hang. Thank you to Manager Ash. Thank you to Nathan Nash for putting it all together. Guys, great hang. Maybe the best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.